I was gonna have my webcam on, but I can't find it. I don't know where it is.
Well, turn it on and it'll show you where it is.
There you go.
It'll just be looking up at the sky in a dump somewhere.
For a documentary in a friend's house, and we got four mattresses. I like built a teepee out of mattresses, and my wife was inside with a microphone doing the voiceover. So it worked great, it worked perfect, but it looked ridiculous.
Maybe I should get more mattresses. They're cheap.
Yeah. I'll just buy four mattresses. Mad thick ones. Yeah,
exactly. King coil mattresses.
So, like, the perfect recording studio is a padded cell.
Yeah, exactly. All the best stuff happens there. Hello and welcome. Welcome back to the Studio Mala podcast. Welcome to my new echoey studio. It's going to sound like this forever now until I fill it up with cushions.
Forever.
But we're back after 5 months. Oh, help me out here. I don't know how many months.
No, you got to assume the listeners, like, the last one has just ended and they're on to the next one. So, you know, you can say we're back. Back yet another.
I'm saying this for the people who have binged it from episode one, and they can hear it from like one episode to the next. We both sound like 1,000 years old for some reason. Like the next week.
Welcome back.
Yeah. I'm joined as always by Owen O'Donnell. Hello, Owen.
Hello. Hello, Sean. Thanks for having me.
Are you well?
I'm well. I am well. Glad to be back.
More importantly, we are joined by the incredible Paul McGrath. How are you, Paul?
I'm good. Thank you. Thank you for using my full title as well.
Yeah. Paul is a multi-talented guy, animator, director, but with Studio Mala, with some of the projects people might be aware of, you've been a cleanup supervisor on a few projects with us now.
Four now.
I think the first one was one that I can't remember if we're allowed to mention or not.
It's not out yet. No, I keep on Googling to see when it's out.
Yeah. But if it turns out we can mention it, I'll add in some sort of robot voice saying it now. Well, actually, no, Owen will do that because he edits it. But that would have been in 2020?
It was all of COVID, actually.
Yeah,
it pretty was. Much. Yeah.
It was our first big series. But then after that would be Kizazimoto, which we can talk about.
Yes.
One of the Disney anthology projects. I think, were you on Hatima or Makuzi? I can never remember who was on what.
Makuzi. I did a little bit on Hatima just to give a dig out every so often. But no, I was on Makuzi for the full whack.
Amazing. I don't know if you've even... Have we talked about Kizazimoto on the podcast, Don? We might have. I've just got no memory.
Was that out when we last?
I don't think
this?
It was.
It's been ages. Probably. Oh my god! Okay, maybe this would be a good time to say.
Yeah, Paul, hang on a second.
I'll be quiet.
Sean, do you want to tell the listeners about that quite exciting big project?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. The time that we've been gone, we released like the biggest thing we've ever worked on, which is 2 episodes of an anthology for Disney. It's on Disney Plus right now, called Kizazimoto. And we did an episode called Makuzi and an episode called Hatima. And they're both sort of sci-fi, Afro-future, fantasy short films. That's a pretty good description of them.
Yeah.
One of them's about like high-speed racing, and one of them's about underwater people at war with each other. And they're really good. And everyone worked really hard on them. But now we've given the context that you were a cleanup supervisor on that. And that was...
Yes.
Something like Makuzi, to be a cleanup supervisor on something that has so intentionally rough outlines and things like that. What kind of challenge is that? Because like, you don't want to lose that in a lot of shots. But because when I think about cleanup, I always imagine like, you know, perfectly clean lines, but something like that that's got a rougher style, what does that mean for your input
for Makuzi specifically? The it was getting kind of approval of a style very early on, before kind of we got into, before anybody else started. I was doing maybe a month of tests of what the line should look like. And the brush does a lot for you. So you're not using kind of a straight line brush. We're using the Amara Walden brush, I think, yeah. Right, Sean?
Shout out to the line.
Which is beautiful. It's really, really lovely. And it's more about controlling the pressure at certain points in the line. So it gives it that bubbly, very hand-drawn look. And it's more, we broke it down into this is what it's going to look like when it's far away. This is what it's going to look like in mid-ground. And this is going to want to look like when it's in the extreme foreground. So I was trying to pick shots that would show, give depth in the line, as well as have the line be thick and thin as it went around as well. And I did a bunch of model sheets very early on, and I was just messing with the line, and I did it really, really thin just to have a look. And I never expected the directors to pick, oh yeah, we really like that really thin line. I was like, oh, okay. But then when things are closer to the camera, I'll make it a lot thicker. And they were like, well, maybe, possibly. So then I had to go back and do a lot of kind of like, well, this is what it's going to look like here, here, and here. And I took a lot of convincing. Because they know what they want. And it's like, it's not blood from a stone as such, because they loved everything. But they were like, but not that, bit more like this. So eventually when we got approval, I was like, okay, I'm not showing you anything else. You've approved this now.
Yeah.
This is the style we're going to go for. There were four of us just doing keys. And then we'd approve the keys, and then we'd fly along and do the in-betweens. And it was hard work. I'm not going to say it wasn't. It was hard work, because it was quite demanding, and it was demanding time-wise as well.
Yeah.
But had a great team. The team were fantastic, and they learned so much on the job doing it, as in to keep the line going. And the animation that was coming through was so clean anyway. Yeah. If anything, we were kind of thinning, if that's a real word, thinning certain parts of it to match what the directors want because of the line work.
It's funny, it was good. That was definitely one of the most demanding projects we've ever worked on, like by a long shot.
And it looked good though. It looked really good. I'm really proud of that.
Yeah. No, it was totally worth it as well. It's an interesting thing with cleanup, whereas like I think people that maybe aren't as aware of, just the animation industry and how it's broken down as a whole, we'll always picture cleanup as being this sort of entry level thing without realizing that it's like, it is the drawing that people see. Like, people seem to forget that about cleanup. It's like, that's the drawing that, like, the rough animation, as nice as it looks, isn't the one that the audience is actually going to see until they do some digging and dig up the rough animations.
Cleanup has evolved a lot. Cleanup used to be you take a very, very rough animation drawing and you do the main keys. And now, because of digital animation, the animation comes in really clean. You're more doing the ink part of cleanup than you are doing the cleanup part, because it's quite clean. You're more kind of, it's the stylization of line that you're looking at more than anything else.
It's weird. Yeah, you're right. Like, because since digital animation, cleanup got confused for a lot of people, in that like it can be so many different things.
It got dismissed by a lot of people as well. The animation is done now. It's like,
Yeah. Yeah, but it looks a bit ropey.
If someone listening wanted to consider doing cleanup and they wanted to practice, how would you go about practicing cleanup animation without, is there a lot of rough animation out there that they could use for practicing?
I don't know. That's a good question. I would say if you're in animation, clean up somebody else's animation, because cleaning up your own animation is murder.
Yeah.
It's really kind of like, oh, do I have to do this again? And it takes you twice as long. And anytime if a shot gets sent back and it needs a retake, I don't give it to the same person who cleaned it up. I give it to somebody else, because it'll be done twice as fast as it would be by the person who's doing it the first time. So yeah, if you're in animation, clean up somebody else's shots. Don't clean up your own shots, because you won't enjoy it at all.
And also, you'll have too many opinions about your own stuff as well.
So it's murder to clean up your own work. And if you don't have access, I would start. I would suggest doing it in pen and paper first as well. Just ink your own drawings, ink stills. Get used to one sweeping arc if you can. I know everybody's so used to just double tap and you undo, but start practicing on paper and get the flow and get your arm working properly and ruin a lot of drawings. Be willing to ruin a lot of drawings and then eventually go, oh, I can get the hang of this.
Yeah.
Because it rely on, I've done it 3 or 4 times myself today. I draw on paper all the time as well as digitally, but I still double tap the page thinking I can undo that and go, ah, I can't. And I have to figure out a way of fixing it. So I would always say start on paper first and get the drawing skills, because you do draw differently on paper than you do on an iPad or a big screen. It's just, it's psychological. So
you can't zoom in.
Ink your own. Yeah, you can't zoom in. Big thing. And what I even say, saying when I'm telling people about cleanup, don't zoom in more than 150%. I don't care. Because you're not going to see it. You're not going to see how that line looks compared to the line beside it. So when you zoom out and go, oh my God, it's ridiculously thick, or it's too thin, then you end up doing it again. So
yeah, say that to like second last year of college me, because I used to zoom in so much that you could only see 4 pixels, like an entire screen.
And then you're like, why is it so blurry?
Yeah.
You've been in animation long enough to see the change from working on paper to digital.
I'm that old, yeah.
But that's all I wanted to say. No, I'm curious, did you see much reluctance to adapt from people around you? Because you seem to have adapted perfectly well, but I imagine a lot of people just weren't willing to.
I remember being, I went to Ballyfermot a long time ago. I remember being at Ballyfermot and the 3D course was only starting. And the arrogance of all of us 2D animators going, they're wasting their time, it'll never take off. And lo and behold, we've all been replaced. As soon as I could get to a computer and actually draw on a computer, I ran at it. I thought it was going to save me so much time. And each iteration of software that has come along, I'm like, oh, this has made my timeline of being able to make something myself. I worked in a Frameworks 20 years ago, and it was all on paper, and we had to scan everything, and then we had to digitally ink and painted in Photoshop because we couldn't afford the bloody software to do it any other way. And then we had to bring all those frames to a post-production place, and the place we could do it was in England, all this type of stuff. It was crazy. I did a Frameworks 2 years ago, and it was me and 3 other people.
Yeah.
And, you know, whereas that time we spent a year and a half working crazy hours, and the amount of people we had to beg, steal and borrow from, and please can you do this, and it was only 5 minutes long, and the amount of shots and the stack of paper in my house at the end of the year, it was ridiculous. And 9 to 5, did a framework, 7 minutes long, 4 people, and it's all on a tiny little hard drive. It was easy. And the advancement of technology and it's even quicker now to do it. And as soon as I could do things faster and easier, and not with less people, but with less mess of people, I jumped at it. So even I spent the last 2 days in Procreate Dreams going, oh, this is going to be so much easier. This is, and it's not. It's just another tool.
You're making me think back to my own animation days, and I'm already deluding myself into thinking, God, if we'd have the technology now, I'd have done so much better. But I really did hate, you need more paper, off to the punch machine, back again, taking a photo of every page and loading it up on the computer really was.
And then having to do your holds and forgetting to do your holds. And I had to do so much stuff in college on a Bolex. So I literally had an X sheet, and it was like click, click, X, X, click, click, X, X. And then I'd be like, oh shit. Did I take a picture?
Yeah.
And then you'd go back and check it.
That was absolute. Because you
and then waiting 6 weeks for it to come back. Ridiculous.
But like the thing about worrying about did I get that shot or not is because it's so boring.
Yes, completely.
Your mind just cannot concentrate on, oh, I did take that one. I know I took that one. Now I'm taking this one. The ducks and rabbits take over the mind.
You'll do anything else. I saw a guy hold down the button for the bollocks, and he was going, and he was going 1, 2, 3, and then he stopped. And I said, "What are you doing?" He said, "Oh, I was taking frames. I was counting my frames." And he was going for about 8 seconds, And wow. by the end of the thing, he'd use the entire roll of film, which is meant to be for like 15 people. So, he got kicked out very quickly. So,
so expensive.
Yeah, that's why. You were like, what? Yeah. But as soon as things became digital, I was like, oh, I can do this, I can do this. And every iteration of software is like, oh, this reduces this amount of workload, this reduces the amount of this. And so it's great, but there's still lots of ways to make a mess and lots of ways to procrastinate and not do stuff, you know?
Well, that's the thing is that when you've got so much access to tech and stuff, there's all sorts of like, because it's cut... because we can cut corners now, there's always so much.
Yeah.
Well, let's try cut all these corners, and then you're like, no, we really need those corners. But it's
what
funny
you
that you say
showing
that.
An animatic.
Like,
yeah.
But there always seems to be like in any decade of animation college, there seems to be a new like X thing is dead. Do this
I,
now.
I don't want to name names, but somebody in Cleanup who I was talking to in the last 6 months or so was told by a lecturer, you're wasting your time. Nobody does cleanup anymore. Yeah. And I was like, well, you know, that's wrong.
Scribbles,
you know?
Are in.
Yeah.
Have you ever experienced yourself or seen an animator and a cleanup artist unhappy with each other? Like an animator feeling
a
cleanup artist has sucked all the life out of the soul or whatever and ruined their work?
Possibly, yeah. I've seen a few people who've thrown tantrums and said they wanted their name taken off projects. I won't name names. I was working in a place good few years ago now, and this was all on paper. I was handing out the shots, and I was going through the shots before I handed it out, and I was like, oh, I think the animator has actually missed drawings. This is a character walking across the scene. And they had two drawings which just looked like squiggles on either side of the page and a timing chart going across, and there's like 42 drawings, no breakdowns, no kind of rough in-betweens, nothing. And I gave it back and said, you know, I think you missed the drawings. And finally said he threw it at me over his desk to my desk and said, no, that's perfectly fine.
He gave you a storyboard, like, basically, or a thumbnail.
Kind of, yeah. And I was like, well, I don't want to tell tales out of school, but I'm going to have to bring this to the director. I said to him, I'm going to have to bring this to the director and go, you know, I can't give this to somebody in cleanup because there's nothing for them to clean up. They're not, they need keys. And he said, the director's already approved it. I was like, oh, okay, then absolutely, that's fine. I said, I'll do it.
I
won't
told
give it
to myself.
And so I did it, and I did it really, really badly. I cleaned up his terrible drawings. And then I submitted it as finished work, and the director was like, what the hell is this? And I'm going, it's his animation.
Yeah.
And he threw a wobbler and stormed around, but he had to do it again. I wasn't going to pass it off to somebody else and have it be their fault.
Yeah, yeah, so, exactly. Yeah. I just love the idea of like, please clean up my lack of drawings.
my 16-foot scene that I'm going to get paid X amount of money for, and you're only going to get paid per drawing. I was like, no, I'm not having that.
Yeah.
And, but there used to be, in the olden days, big kind of animosity between cleanup and animation and nearly all departments. But it was bred that way. It was if you want to be in animation, you have to suffer these things first. And it was terrible. It was not nice at all. But it was bred that way, as if like you have to earn your way up to this. And it's really unfair. And a lot of people who would be great at the job left because they were like, I'm not dealing with this shit. Really?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's not like that. It's certainly not like that in my experience in Mala. It's always been very, very good.
One of the things that's always animated so well in all stuff is that if a character is really angry, you know, like a Donald Duck or, you know, a similar like big tantrum, and it's like, it must be because the animators had so much reference, they just had to look around the office.
Yeah,
they just share something at cleanup and then they go, oh yeah, we'll draw it like that.
What what have you worked on that you're most proud of having been a part of? And you're not obligated to say a Mala thing.
I was going to say all my own work. I'm really proud of the frameworks. We finished the frameworks a couple of years ago, Lady Betty. Yeah. It's just finished its festival run. You can watch it on the Film Board website, or it's on Omeletto. It's in a few places. So I was really, really proud of that. I was really happy with that. I'm very proud of Makuzi. I think that looks really, really good. I'm really happy with that. I've made a bunch of short films and a couple of feature films, documentaries and things with my wife. I'm really proud of them as well. So I've done. I'm proud of all my work. There's
an all rounder.
I also feel that I've gotten better. Everything I've done, I've learned something that I'm not going to do that next time. I brought that. I've tried to bring that to every project I've done, even from the first big project in Mala. I was like, okay, we're not going to do that again on this project. And I even right up to the last one. I don't know if we could talk about that one either. Each time it's like, okay, I've learned from these mistakes or these ways of doing things, bring it forward. And I know I've worked with other people who have never done that, or I feel they've never done that. I feel that they make the same mistake or they make the same choices each time and they expect different results. But I'll always kind of push for like, these are the things I messed up or that I saw that I could have done better. And I always want to try and improve on that. I think that's why I'm still doing this. If I was doing the same things, making the same mistakes over and over, I'd be very unhappy with my work.
Yeah.
So I've always tried to learn something, every project.
It's so strange to think that animation being such an inherently collaborative process, the team has to work together, tantrums or not. At the end of the day, it's only going to be done with collaboration.
Absolutely. So, but there's lots of people who are like, you're working for me.
Yeah.
You're doing this for me. You're doing this for my company. I'm an exec. I am in charge of this because you work for me. And it's like, well, I work with you. And I say this to anybody I meet who's new in animation. There's more of us. It's like politics. There's more of us than there are of them. There might be three or four big companies.
Yeah.
But they employ hundreds of us. And we should be demanding to be treated better and treated fairly. And it's a reason why I haven't worked on big projects, because I went in the interview and I interviewed for bigger studios. Oh, this is the type of thing. It's like, I don't work past 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
And they're like, what? Yeah, it's 9 to 5 or it's, 10 to 6, whatever you want, but I won't work past. I don't do overtime. Oh, well, it's really needed sometimes and the company ethos is like this. It's like, well, your scheduling is not my problem. If you can't schedule a project for 50 people to do it from 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, then hire me and I will do that for you because I know how to do that. But if you're going to expect me to be every 6 weeks, work Friday night, half day Saturday and Sunday and come in on Monday because you just can't schedule a project to be finished in 15 weeks. That's not my fault. That's your fault. I was like, thanks for coming to the interview, Paul. We won't be giving you the job, So, and it's why there's so many people in the animation who are not over 40.
Yeah.
Now, animation's a very young industry because at a certain point you go, I'm not going to take this anymore. I want to have a life on the weekend. I want to meet my friends. I want to buy a house. I want to have a mortgage. I want to do these things. And you can't in animation because it kind of cripples you. You're let go every 8 weeks or you let go every 6 months.
Yeah.
Those companies are still churning work out 52 weeks a year. So,
especially when it's being put down as ethos from the start point, like from the interview point, it's kind of crazy to be like,
our company culture occasionally is overtime.
Yeah. So, because If the schedule is expecting overtime, then there's probably going to be overtime added to that as well.
Oh, completely. I've seen production schedules and I'm going, so this is a 7-minute show and you want it done and it's being done whatever in Toon Boom or Harmony or whatever. And you think you're going to get 30 seconds a week out of everybody in this room. So there's not enough people here to do that. And they're like, oh no, yeah, we've done it before. And then you find out that it's every Friday, everybody's there till 10 o'clock at night. It's like, that's not right. And if you know that from the first episode, you should be able to program it for
Every
episode after that. You need more time.
It'll either be we've done it before and you find that out, or it's we've done it before, but the done it before was a completely different show.
Different
with a
style,
pipeline.
Different show, yeah.
You're like, we've done it before on this show that was just stills for 7 minutes.
And it's, I say the same in cleanup, throwing people at the problem isn't going to solve it, because you need people who know how to fix the problem before it even starts. And if you suddenly go, oh, we did enough people to do the cleanup on this for 10 minutes. Well, I'll give you 10 more people. Do those 10 people know how to do cleanup?
Yeah.
There's a standard that it's required to bring it through to ink and paint so that they can finish it on their schedule. So,
or even like on
answer.
This show, because like every show is so weird and
everything's different.
Yeah. It never works.
I'm getting complaining and political now. Sorry.
No, it's fine. Like, you know, these things need to be talked about. It's a problem that hasn't gone away, and
I think it's kind of built in. It's built into the industry for a big part of it. And it's changing now. I mean, people are being a lot more vocal and complaining about it and doing things about it. But for a long time, if you're working on animation, you just expect it to go overtime. That's it. And I did it for years. I'm not saying that I give it a go. I did it for a very long time until a certain point it was like, you know what? I don't think I've had a meal that hasn't been at my desk in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
I don't think the relationships, forget it. You know, the amount of times I stood people up or I was tragically late or left early because it's like, I can't keep doing this. It's unfair to yourself. And the industry expected it. And if you did it, you were all like, oh, you're brilliant, you're a hell of a worker. It's like, yeah, it's 4 a.m. You know,
first in and last
out. Good for me. Yeah, it's not good enough.
There isn't even a lie about, oh, that's only the first year and then it's fine. It's like, no, this is how you'll begin. And that's that.
Yeah.
There isn't even a lie about it getting better. It's just that's how it's assumed. Well, that's the deal. That's the job.
I worked on a small series a good few years ago, and I was butting heads constantly with the production manager. And at a certain point, she was like, "Well, Paul, you won't be invited back for a second series." And I was like, "No, I'll tell you now. My contract ends in 2 weeks. I'm not coming back after that."
Yeah.
And I'm like, but the show isn't finished. They're going, you hired me for 16 weeks. You keep on telling me you want to extend my contract because there's more work to be done. I don't want to work on this show after the end of my contract. That's it. I don't care. And it was like, okay. And my wife was like, you'll never work for that company again. I was like, I know. Intentionally, I will never work for that company again. And the way they solved their problem was by hiring 20 interns.
Oh, good.
That's how they finished their series. So it's
the whole, but then that's the whole problem of, like, you know, you can't, 9 women can't deliver a baby in 1 month kind of thing.
So, I've never heard that before.
Yeah,
I've never heard that either. That's,
really?
That's good though. Man.
Yeah.
They could certainly try though. I mean,
yeah, I mean, maybe not yet. You don't have any cards on you there, Owen, do you?
Oh, I remember this. Aha.
Okay. You're twisting my arm, Sean.
I'm going to
I had to go and root these out.
So Owen has just produced a pack of oblique strategy cards, and I'm going to... I don't want to explain it every time. We've got a deck of cards...
You have to explain.
...that are designed to give you an idea. And in episode 1 of this podcast, we thought it would be a really good segment to read them and see what kind of... topic it sparks, and it rarely ever works, but god damn it, we're going to commit to it. So we have drawn a card for Paul, and it says,
question the heroic approach.
Right.
What that actually that is mean? Similar to what you were just saying.
Yes, the heroic.
Well, I feel like a lot of those animators who do serious amounts of overtime maybe at a certain point see themselves as like, I'm taking this on for everybody, and I'm going
absolutely.
To be a hero. And you have to question that, maybe.
I particularly like when the owner's going home and saying, thanks very much, you're doing a fantastic job.
Yeah.
And I would be patting myself on the back going, hey, I'm brilliant at this.
Yeah.
And you weren't brilliant at it. You were just the donkey who was willing to do it. So, and it's...
Well, that's certainly questioning the heroic approach. But you're right that there's, you can fall into the trap of thinking that even some of like crunch and overtime and basically being taken advantage of, you know, like the all-nighter thing and just all of that, you can fool yourself into thinking that that's something to be proud of and, you know, working yourself to the bone. It just, it's not worth it.
No.
unless you are just finishing some personal thing that, like, maybe you've climbed that mountain, maybe, but even
or if you're like maybe like a surgeon, if you're like literally operating on a person.
It's 5 o'clock, I'm going home. Yeah, stitch him up. No, I've done serious overtime on my own projects, and I've done, and but then even when I'm working on, if my wife and I are making a film or if we're doing something, it's long hours, but I'll be there. I'm the person paying everybody to be there. I'll be there with them. And I'd be like, okay, we're all taking a break now. We're all going to have something to eat because it's this, and we're all going to do this. And you, well, I suppose in live action, an army marches on its feet type of thing. If you keep people fed, if you keep people happy and don't exploit them, you, and you know, I'm there doing the same hours they are, but they're getting paid as well. In animation, a lot of the time it's like, you know, okay, you know, we'll see you tomorrow. You know, there's the key code so you can get out. Bye. And I did that for years, and to a certain point it was like, you know what, I'm not getting the benefit of this, and it's not as if I'm getting better at my craft by killing myself doing it. So
your hands
because
are turning
don't.
Into dust. Yeah,
yeah. And the
wrist
whole
pain.
draw every day thing, I think that's bollocks. So sometimes you just need to not draw and relax.
Absorb.
And do something else, because if you try and draw every day, you're going to learn to hate it.
But you've also got no experience to draw from as well. Like, it's the whole...
Yeah, or draw rubbish. Draw, do you... I mean, I have countless sketchbooks which I'd never show anybody because it's like stick man. And bad drawings of people at the bus stop. You know? So just draw for what you want, not for what you think you can get out of it. Because you'll get better by doing it naturally instead of just forcing yourself to do it.
Yeah.
There you go. That's
wise words.
My two pennies.
Question the heroic approach. Before we wrap up, I guess, Paul, are there any just any closing messages you'd like to share, or any things you're working on you'd like to talk about?
I'm working on a few things, but I can't actually talk about any of them.
Okay.
It's all developmental stuff, and it'll either go really well or be just like, I don't want to talk about that anymore. I'm flogging cards.
Yeah,
I'm
flog your cards.
I'm flogging Satanic Mass cards.
These
so,
are good.
Do you know, you obviously know Owen, Mass cards.
Yes.
Yes. I'm selling Satanic Mass cards. So somebody, if you get one of these cards, somebody has said a Satanic Mass for you. So somebody you dislike... Something bad will happen to them. They will lose their car. Something small and bad. Nothing horrific now. Nobody goes to prison and nobody gets killed. But somebody might wet their pants in public, or walk on a Lego brick in their stocking feet, or lose their suitcase or something. So there you go.
I love bad things happening to people I hate.
There you go. I've got 10 cards that you can buy on my website. I did that earlier on in the year just as a something to do between.
Well, no
games.
Better time than Christmas, which I
absolutely know. Satanic Mass cards aren't just for Christmas; they're for all the time.
And
so,
and where can people find that?
Follow the link on my Instagram. My Instagram is at Paul Doodles.
There you
Lovely.
Go.
There
That's
you go.
An easy one to remember.
Satanic Mass cards. Check them out, folks.
Yeah, hail Satan, folks. Hail Satan.
Speaking of selling stuff,
yes.
Sean, is there anything you'd like to say?
Yes. Keep an eye out for t-shirts. Just in general. Just if you're out and about and you see a t-shirt, try it on. You might like it. We'll soon be releasing some Studio Mal exclusive t-shirts.
Lovely.
I'm not going to reveal what the design is yet because I've put a lot of work into a video that reveals that. But by the time this podcast is out, that might have already released. But do you know what? I'm not going to promise that because this is either going to come out before or after Christmas.
This hype train is at the station. Is it boarding?
Do not edit a second of this. Is all staying in. look, there's going to be t-shirts, and you should buy them and a packet of Paul's satanic mass cards for all your friends for Christmas.
Bye. And speaking of bye.
Yeah. Just speaking of this, bye. Yeah. Bye.
Thanks for having me. Bye bye.
Paul, it was a pleasure.
Thanks so much.
So there's music fading in right now, and then.
Oh, God. Why are we so bad at making this podcast? Oh, no.
There you go. That's a good
Someone
ending.
Must have bought a satanic mask card to curse the podcast.